Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Happy Halloween, cultists. Yes, no sooner did we finish our Romero retrospective than we're back, this time with a very special Samhain 2025 episode. Admit it, I'm good to you. Yep, we're back with another look at a cult classic, and whether you're rummaging through your haul of candy from this year or are hiding in the house with the lights off, I invite you to come join us for the next hour and change. And this time it's a little different. This time, our cinematic time machine is setting the dial for just a few years back. It may be recent, but it's no less the purview of this show. This time, we're taking a look at 2021's Nicolas Cage roller coaster that is Willy's Wonderland. So congratulations, you are officially on staff. Grab a shirt and put your balls on. We're going to Willy's. I'm DK, your forever host on these things, but as always, I'm not alone. This time around, we've got a very special guest for you lovely people. She's not trapped in here with me. I'm trapped in here with her. All the way from LA, she's an actress, musician, comedian, and entertainer, an all-round renaissance woman. It's Melissa Maliha.
Oh, geez. What an intro. Oh, my God. Thank you, DK.
Oh, well, you've got to get used to it. You know, big things are coming.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes, I mean, this is the greatest thing I've done thus far, so I'm very excited to be here.
Nice one. You can only get better from this, so don't worry. So how are you doing today? All good?
Oh, it is wonderful. Happy Halloween. I love spooky season. I am absolutely a huge fan of horror, so I'm very excited to be here for this special bootacular episode. This movie particularly is actually very, very near and dear to my heart. So this is me sharing a piece of my soul with you and all of you. You called them your cultists?
Yes.
All of the cultists, yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, whenever someone new joins us on the show, I give our audience a chance to get to know them by asking a few questions. So I'm going to jump right into that, if that's okay.
Yeah, of course.
So as I said in the introduction, you've got many, many strings to your bow, but, you know, how did it all start for you?
Oh, gosh. You know, whenever sometimes you just happen to know your life purpose, like it just, there was never a question for me. I was 5 years old and, you know, you asked me, what do you want to be when you grow up? And my answer verbatim was, I want to be an actress and a judge in that order. I've known, and I also used to go by the nickname of Hollywood. My parents gave me that nickname, Hollywood. So, like, because I would act out, you know, movies and my favorite plays and, you know, wear big sunglasses. And I was always camera ready, no matter, it didn't matter. I could be in the middle of, like, shoving food in my face. My mom would be like, Melissa, I look over, boom, smile. I was there. I was always ready. I've tried a lot of different things in my life. I tried being an auditor for a freight logistics billing company at one point. You know, I was a health and life insurance broker certified in Obamacare when that came out for the state of Florida. I've tried a lot of different things, but I can't deny who I am anymore. I am an entertainer. I am an activist and humanitarian. I can't live a lie anymore. I got to live my truth. And so since 2018, I've officially like made this my career. It's been great to me. I mean, here I am. So
You got to the point where you actually moved across country. You went to live in LA. You know, how are you finding that so far?
You know, LA is genuinely, I have found the glitter and the grunge of LA, and I love it. Because, you know, a lot of movies, they'll either show just like the slums to try and be like, oh, big cities, so scary. Or they just show like Beverly Hills and Hollywood. But there's another side. There's a third side of LA that is beautiful, and it's the local culture and the traditions. And, you know, I've really fallen in love with how much community means to LA locals and people that genuinely love this city. You know, after the fires, like, there was actually a point that all of the donation centers were turning away donations because there was too many clothes and too much food and too many volunteers, actually. There was people, they literally said, thank you, but we're all good, you know? This is what it means to be an Angeleno, is community. And, you know, this is a place where dreamers come to find themselves. And, like, that's what I did. You know, I grew up in Florida and in Turkey, and I literally took a couple years to get here, but I went from Florida to Nashville to Fort Collins to LA. Like, I, you know, it took me time to get here, but the dream was always to be here. Los Angeles is more than just Maseratis and movie stars. It's the skyline with the sunset. It's the palm trees. It's the people. It's the food. It's the fact that you get to experience the whole world in one city. It's a melting pot. Oh, sorry. I went all sentimental with this.
Yeah, I love this city
so much. Yeah.
As far as your career goes, what is your, would you say right now is your prime focus?
I would probably say it's a tie between film acting and comedy as of late. But that's just because I haven't made any connections to the music scene out here in LA. But I'm looking to. Depends on the day is the hat that I want to wear.
Nice. So, you've done a lot so far, but what's been the most fun part about your journey?
At risk of getting sentimental, the people, but getting to know people. But also, I guess it's that you never know what adventure you can find yourself getting into. And I think that, you know, having a mindset of curiosity has allowed me to experience a lot of things that maybe a lot of people haven't. And, you know, I feel very grateful for such opportunities.
Cool. So, what are you hoping for in regards to your own journey to stardom, as it were? What's, if you could pick a dream project, what would you have?
Oh, gosh. Okay. I know you said one, but I'm going to say two. One is I would like to work on a Darren Aronofsky film. I would love to be before he retires. That's my dream project. However, I would also too like to be in a movie with Nicolas Cage. I used to not like him, and I used to do silly little impersonations of him because of my dislike of his acting style. However, because he is a solid stand-up guy, and I get his style of being the silly Coppola, right? I get it. And now I want to be in it. I want to do a project with him after, what is it? The Immeasurable Weight of Massive Talent with Pedro Pascal. Right.
Love that movie. So ideally what you're looking at is a project by Darren Aronofsky starring Nick Cage.
Oh my gosh. Do you know what? Listen, Darren, you don't even have to pay me for that idea. You can keep that one on the house, okay? We can make this. All I ask is just for, you know, a lead role, you know, a lead co-starring role with Nick Cage, bada boom, bada bing. Like, we got it, right? So, I don't know.
It just writes itself.
It writes itself. Listen, I got the showrunners on speed dial. We'll figure it out, all right? My people will call your people.
Where can the listener check out your shows?
Yeah, so I primarily post on Instagram lately. That's kind of been my platform of choice ever since TikTok kind of got, I'm going to say lobotomized. So, yeah. So I've been on Instagram. It's melissa.meliha, M-E-L-I-S-S-A dot M-E-L-I-H-A. And then you can also find me on TikTok as well under the same moniker. I don't know, snail mail, probably carrier pigeon. Melissa Meliha is the primary. I mean, that's what I've been going by, for my stage name. It's my first and it's my actual name anyway, but you know, all cool. The same. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we'll get the links and we'll put them in the description. So if anybody out there wants to check out your stuff, just click on the link in the description and highly recommend it. I'm going to put you on the spot now and ask you a question we ask all first timers to the show. Now, if you had to choose one cult movie of any genre, you can only watch that cult movie for the rest of your life, what would that movie be?
Willy's Wonderland. I swear to God. I swear to God. I have watched this movie already and done screenings of this movie. I've watched it over 30 times, I think, was 30, 40 times at this point, because I've shown it to so many people. It's, and I enjoy it every single time. So I gunned ahead Willy's Wonderland.
Yeah, now we know that your score is going to be 5 out of 5. We'll segue nicely from that to the entire reason you're here. Today's movie, which is Willy's Wonderland, a 2021 American action comedy horror film directed by Kevin Lewis from a screenplay written by G.O. Parsons. The film stars Nicolas Cage, Emily Toster, Rick Wright, David Sheftel, and Beth Grant. It follows a quiet drifter who is tricked into cleaning up an abandoned family entertainment center inhabited with 8 murderous animatronic mascots who are possessed with the souls of a cannibalistic killer and his colleagues. The project was announced in October 2019, with screenwriter Parsons having conceived the idea. It caught Cage's attention, who agreed to participate as both an actor and a producer on the movie. Lewis was hired as a director in December 2019, while the rest of the main cast joined in February 2020. Principal photography began in February 2020 for a month in various parts of Atlanta, Georgia, with a deserted bowling alley in the Sprayberry Crossing Shopping Center in Marietta used as the Willy's Wonderland Family Entertainment Center. It was originally set for a worldwide theatrical release on October 30th, 2020, but was postponed in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Instead, it was released through video on demand with a simultaneous limited theatrical release in the US on February the 12th, 2021 by Screen Media. It went on to gross $457,000 worldwide against a budget of $5 million, with the film receiving mixed reviews, though with particular praise for Cage's performance. Despite its recent release, it's already developed a passionate cult following, as evidenced, as more and more discover it. And as with all the movies we feature here on the show, Willy's Wonderland can be found in both digital and physical formats, depending on your inclination and location. So, yeah, confession time here now, listeners. Despite it being on my ever-expanding watch list, I'd never gotten around to it. So, my first experience with this one is entirely down to today's guest. After broaching the possibility of her appearing on the show, she was adamant that I watch it. So, weirdly enough, my memories of this one will be forevermore entwined with my friend Melissa here. So, for now, I've got to ask you, Melissa, how did you first come to this one? Can you remember when you first sat and watched it? Or were you there? Were you part of this kind of Willy's Wonderland cult before it even went into production?
So actually, I was a huge fan of Five Nights at Freddy's originally, right? So you can't bring up Willy's Wonderland without also bringing up Five Nights at Freddy's. You know, Five Nights at Freddy's walked so Willy's Wonderland could run. And So I was very excited about the idea of a Five Nights at Freddy's movie. And, you know, I've already had a very strong opinion of Nicolas Cage prior. So, but I think just somebody in my stream community told me about it and said, hey, there's this Five Nights at Freddy's type movie coming out and it stars Nicolas Cage. And I was like, originally, I was very grumpy. I was very, very grumpy. And I may have said a lot of not very nice words. And but the more like when the trailer actually came out for it, I was like literally, you know, I've been following this movie since the whispers of it have even, you know, made it to the main line. And so finally I watched the trailer and I was like, all right, okay. And so my friends and I, we even held a screening. Like, we all rented the movie and watched it at the same time and did, like, you know, a whole proper screening the day it was released.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, but it was a cult hit before it even made it to the screen. So, I mean, I understand having it been on Bloodlist and catching Cage's attention. Were you aware of all this when, you know, you said you were there for the whispers, so were you aware of all what was occurring at the time?
Well, sort of. You know, we followed it pretty closely. Like I said, you know, if I wasn't the one that was getting the news update, somebody was updating me, you know. We were all pretty curious about, you know, Nick Cage was the big, big part.
Nice one. Well, I mean, when you were first trying to get me to watch it, you mentioned Chuck E. Cheese. Now, that's not really something we have in the UK or Europe, but we do know of Chuck E. Cheese's reputation. So, you know, it's known throughout Europe, or at least the UK. You can kind of see the Chuck E. Cheese reference right off the bat. And is that something that, I mean, you know, did you go there as a kid? Were you taken there? Was it really as deranged and creepy?
Oh, absolutely. It's oh my gosh. Chuck E. Cheese is a very, very real thing. They don't really do the animatronics anymore, from what I understand. I could be wrong. Their commenters, please correct me if I am. But from what I remember, it has been a while. They've since stopped using the animatronics for good reason, because they are really fucking creepy. But no, yeah, Chuck E. Cheese. Oh, and they're notorious for the absolute garbage cardboard pizza. You can't not go to a Chuck E. Cheese's, and you know the pizza is going to be bad. You're not ordering it for the quality. You're ordering it for the experience.
You did mention Five Nights at Freddy's, and it is inevitable that this was going to be compared, be it to the movie or the game that inspired it, even though I think this came before the movie. Many compared it to the video game series, although Parsons and Lewis denied any kind of similarities. They weren't thinking about it. How familiar were you with that franchise when you came across this?
Five Nights at Freddy's, ever since it originally came out, I have been following it since then. So it's another one of those since the beginning kind of. And then I followed the lore. I followed the sister location, all the way up to sister location, to the pizzerias, Help Wanted, you know, all of the other like kind of off brands. There's so many Five Nights at Freddy's games now. You know, they really ran with the series.
I was going to say, it does. I mean, I'm talking about the writing of this thing now. It does have a very video game vibe, you know, a kind of silent protagonist. You've got kind of drinking energy drinks to get your mojo back. You've got a little pinball mini game. I don't know how you feel about this with regards to the writing.
Yeah, actually, you know, there is a couple of people that have mentioned, and you know, you could have definitely, that's a theory, I think, in just the community itself, that Nick Cage could also be representative of the silent protagonist in a video game. So, you know, you don't say anything. However, you know, everybody talks to you. And so Nick Cage specifically said that he really wanted to play a silent protagonist, so he even charged by the word, so to prevent speaking.
So yeah, I mean, that brings us into the writing of this. So I'm just wondering what you thought to the writing of this one.
I like that there is a I like that they know that they're cheesy and that they're playing into these tropes, and that's the fucking point. That's something that I really, really love that they allow for, you know, as I mentioned, kind of like with the Scooby-Doo gang, right? Like, they really, really broke into those archetypes where you have the sex pot, you have the lead girl, you have the jock, you have the bully, you know, they really allowed to, in such a short amount of time, which I think is also the impressive part, is that whenever you can express such a deep story through brevity, it's impressive to me.
Yeah. I mean, they're not as elaborated on as Liv, but they are entertaining. They are written as your typical horror movie group of disposable teens, but there's still some fun in the way that they're written. And I do like that about this one, that you can almost pigeonhole yourself as to who you identify with. For me, it was Chris, not the whole, you know, infatuated with Liv thing, but just the, what the hell am I looking in the fridge for? When they're trying to find something to unlock her handcuffs. And I thought, yeah, that's me. But let's get on to Cage's character. For a good long while, I was kind of like you in that when he first started and when he was first doing the, you know, the arty films, the more, you know, the Coen brothers, the Lynch stuff, I kind of respected him. But as he went on, he became more or less a parody of himself. And so when someone mentioned, oh, Nick Cage is in this film, he was kind of like an instant turnoff. But I will say that he seems to have kind of lent into that. He knows what his reputation for acting is. And then you get films like this, like Massive Talent. And I have honestly got to say, I do respect the guy now because he's not afraid to be self-deprecating. His character, I really like it because there's like a sort of High Plains Drifter vibe to it, which I dig. He comes in, he's got to deal with shit, he moves on, and it's just, there's not a word. I mean, I also love how it kind of subverts the trope used in so many productions. And I'm going to use an example here from Dust Till Dawn, where the hero or slash anti-hero, whatever you want to call it, rides off, leaving the kind of female protagonist behind. I love that it kind of turns that on its head and she goes with him. I mean, he even gives her a can of the energy drink. He respects her at the end of it, and I love that. And it's that setup that has me wanting a sequel.
I would love a sequel, but I think that they've said that if they... they've never said that they were going to do a sequel. They've kind of said that it's sort of that the story has been told of Willy's Wonderland. I don't know. I'm kind of happy with it being like a one and done. As far as like Willy's go, and Liv and the janitor, his official name, this is the janitor. I'm happy with driving off into the sunset as we see the last remnants of everything fade into the distance.
Yeah. With regards to Liv, speaking of her, I love how Liv and, you know, to an extent, Eloise are introduced. Mm-hmm. It gets rid of a lot of kind of exposition right off the bat and takes an angle that we're not necessarily used to. I mean, the explanations, of course, come later, but you're immediately wrong-footed to an extent. You think it's a regular setup until Eloise drags her to the trailer and slaps the handcuffs on the pipe, you know, and you're left wondering how these characters know each other, that sort of thing. I just wondered what you thought to that with regards to the introductions.
Yeah, that was one hell of an introduction, that's for sure. Eloise and Liv, the handcuff to the heater, that was... And I actually even asked the same kind of question there. Like, you know, can you justify Eloise handcuffing Liv to the heater because of what she knows is going on at Willy's? Like, do the ends justify the means, right? Like, I don't Do I think it's ethical? Do I agree with what she did? No. In no way would I ever condone such behavior. However, we also don't live in a timeline where there are demonic possessed animatronics at a child's dinner entertainment venue.
That we know of.
Right.
I've got to give a shout out actually to the actress Beth Grant.
Oh, you know what? I was saying that she's one of those faces that you see in so many things, and so I'm really happy that she's getting this opportunity to get her flowers. So, you know, yeah, hooray, Beth Grant appreciation moment for sure.
And I mean, you know, kudos to pretty much everybody in the cast, but you know, the main ones are Beth Grant, you know, Emily Toster as Liv, who I think does a decent job, and yeah, we're on, you know, again, Nick Cage, he doesn't say a word, but he still shows his versatility. I mean, from letting the glasses do this talking at the start, I mean, I wish I could look that cool when nodding. Yeah, to his return to form when he's dancing in the latter half, which I love, hence the avatar that I've got. But yeah, with regards to the writing, is there anything that that you think particularly jumps out with regards to this?
I really enjoyed, but I mentioned, you know, earlier, the telling such a story in such a brief amount of time, such a deep and enriching story. But I also really enjoyed how there were some really good one-liners. I actually, to Beth Grant, put your balls on, Evan. We're going to Willie's. You know, like I, or even my hat's off to you. My hat's off to him. That is one tough hombre. You know, that was a text at the end there. And, you know, I really enjoyed that there was a lot of really memorable lines and, you know.
I just love it. I mean, I've got a couple. Again, another one is Beth Grant, where, you know, they're taking it outside and she's stood there with the shotgun and she's like, drop the lizard.
Actually, you know what? I think this is just becoming a Beth Grant appreciation episode.
In every like kind of cult movie, there's a background character that usually stands out, and it's usually played by a decent character actor like Clu Gallagher, or even to some extent Robert Englund when he does his cameos. And I think Beth Grant kind of steals the scenes that she's in with regards to this one. She
100%.
Although I do have to give a special shout out to not necessarily dialogue worthy, but just the way it's performed. Where Tito is getting beaten up by the side of the road.
Yes.
And the subtitle comes up, ow, hey, my balls. And then you can hear him kind of whimper him, no mas, por favor, no mas. I love that. It just has me in stitches.
You know, I'm with you. That was a great comedic break. That was another thing, actually. I'd like to give shout out to the writers on that. Thank you for including a couple of like really good comedic breaks in this. Like, I feel like if it was just all like thriller versus Jason Bourne-esque type action, I feel like I would have gotten bored. But because there was such really good comedy writing in there. The writing, 10 out of 10. 5 out of 5.
Yes.
For 100.
Definitely. I do think it's cool that Cage, after seeing this, said, yeah, not only am I going to sign on to star in it, but I want to produce it. That shows he had kind of faith in the writing of this thing from the beginning.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Like, I feel like he invested so much of himself and into this. I mean, allegedly, and I can't confirm this, but that might have been Nick Cage's actual car. Like, you know, I feel like they did they'd used a lot of resources where they could cut budget. Cause again, this was only a $5 million movie. So, and also allegedly, those punches that he was drinking were just Diet Cokes with the label thrown on top. So
I do know that the pinball, apparently it was a converted 1982 Gottlieb table called Devil's Dare. So yeah, that's another thing I wanted after this. Not only do I want the t-shirt, not only do I want one of those damn punch drinks, but I want that pinball machine.
Fun fact, I don't know if you noticed this, but when he was playing pinball, did you notice the song that was playing? It was Pop Goes the Weasel, because Willie the Weasel.
Oh, yes, yes. So, yeah, I mean, this it brings us to the direction. We've talked about the writing. We've touched upon the acting. What do you think to the direction on this one?
I think it was wonderful. I really enjoyed the animatronics. I liked how it was just people. I mean, it was just costumes. There wasn't animatronics. It wasn't. There was no machine, nothing. It was just literally people pretending to be machines. That takes a really specific type of direction, because if they move too much, or if they're even just the right amount of, if they're just too fluid or not rigid enough, you know, or I feel like it really takes a keen eye for detail. So I feel like the director was able to really bring a keen eye of detail to the viewer. There's a couple of Easter eggs, I guess I'll call them, that I would like to have seen not part of this.
Like what?
So at the end there, whenever it's the Sheriff Willie and the janitor, and, you know, she says, Willie needs to eat and I'm going to feed him. And she calls Willie over to sick him, quote unquote, onto the janitor. You'll see that Willie slices her in half. Now, if you're actually paying attention, you'll look at the top left corner, the mannequin or the dummy or whatever that was used to be the other half of the sheriff's body is still hanging in frame. And it's you know, and I know they kind of tried to darken the scene to sort of hide it, but like it was, I don't know, like it's one thing if you see like an arm for a second, like oops-a-daisy, but it's literally the whole torso. Like you can see the whole torso just hanging there. I'm laughing about it because it's an oops, but also like if you're asking for me to give you my honest critique of direction, that's something that should have been caught while filming, I feel.
So is there any, are there any kind of like shots in this that you particularly love? Any kind of setups or any, you know, way that the direction took a turn that particularly grabs you, particularly appeals to you?
I would actually even say that this movie had no business having half of the shots that they did that were so well done. There was in the beginning when we're waiting for the tow truck to come around with the janitor and they're showing the progression of time, they show it through the way that the sun moves and his shadow versus the direction or the position of the sun. It's what a creative, unique way to show the passage of time, or when they're showing there's no ATM or the missing people posters, like the quick zoom shots, or when Liv was getting arrested, like it's just it feels very Tarantino-esque to me, like it almost, gosh, I would even say like Pulp Fiction, you know, like very just boom, boom, boom. You see exactly what you need to see to tell the story of what's happening. Like there's no question that Liv was getting arrested, right? We saw the handcuffs, the door slam, you know, the lights, whatever. Like, so.
Yeah. It's like, as soon as you see the close up on the padlock and chain and, you know, hearing tell him he needs to be there overnight, you know, something's up. The movie is kind of based a lot on the show don't tell premise, and I think it succeeds in that. I had such a great time watching it. It's just fun, and that's what I loved about this.
It's not supposed to be a movie. I tell everybody that watches it for the first time, think of it more of an experience rather than a movie. Like this is a roller coaster. Like, but this is, and you know, the beginning part of the movie, you are in the carousel and you're getting all the safety checks and, you know, whatever, seatbelts, blah, 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 blah. And right when you get to the ostrich fight, I feel like is when you're climbing the hill. And then once Nick Cage, says no more fucking around, that's the drop, and thus begins the experience and the ride that is Willy's Wonderland. I'm glad that you liked it. I knew if you like Killer Clowns from Outer Space, like, there's no way you're not gonna like bullshit like this.
Well, I mean, Lewis himself, he describes this as Pale Rider versus Killer Clowns from Outer Space. If I'd not seen the movie, if I'd have seen that line, I would have been, okay, sold.
Right, right. So, I'm not sure if this, I guess this would count as direction, but I really enjoyed that they had Tim Burton-style, like, Beetlejuice-style animations, like, twice throughout the movie.
Yes.
So, I like that they decided to do that, and I like that it was all practical as well. It was practical sets, practical props, like, really the only CGI was how Sarah Siren moved and the gator in that one scene after he meets Liv. I really enjoyed that as well. Can we talk about the music a little bit? So this is a shout out to Emwa, the music composer of this film, but this is all minus one song, original compositions. And he really, we had a conversation. And so this is confirmed, but every animatronic has their own theme. If you listen, you'll notice that, like, for example, we'll go back to Gus the gorilla. Because he's a gorilla, you'll hear that there's a lot of jungle type sounds where there's like bongos and bass, and it just sounds like a jungle. So each animatronic has their moment in the sun to have each of their themes. So that's something cool to look out for new viewers, or even viewers that may have missed that the first time.
I've got to say, I do love the music in this, and it fits. Not only does it fit extremely well into the production from that opening onwards, that this thing is right in my wheelhouse. I mean, when he's there cleaning that bathroom in high speed, I mean, I couldn't believe I was enjoying watching someone clean a damn bathroom, but it's it's down to the music. Although I will say, it's, you know, there's some really good editing in this as well as the direction. It's reminiscent to me of Edgar Wright. But yeah, I love the music in this. I think it's done really well.
Yeah, that's why I say Emwa is, I'm going to give him his flowers as well here. So that nice way. One. Even the scene, the pinball scene where, you know, your avatar is from, I asked him, I was like, so what was it like to have Nick Cage dancing to your music? He was like, it was one of the greatest moments of my life.
So, I can well believe that. Yeah.
So it's the music, the score, everything. It just, I feel like, and even the titles of the songs, they, you know, so much time and effort has been put into this. Like, I just feel the love in this entire project.
Do you know, I was gonna say that it's only a small budget, but when everybody loves putting their heart and soul into a project, you can feel that coming out. It doesn't feel like a cookie cutter film that's just mass produced. It doesn't feel at any point to me. I mean, yeah, it doesn't. It's not the most professional looking film. I'll say that.
Sure.
But it's, you can tell that people had fun and they were doing what they wanted to do. And there is a lot of passion in this, and I love that about this. And I think that's the reason why I like these kind of movies. It's, to some extent, a lot of these premises that we look at here, it's what a lot of, you know, critics would maybe turn their nose up at. But there's some artistry involved in here, and there's some passion involved, and there's so much creativity, and that's why I love these things.
It's people that love to do what they're doing, probably didn't get paid much to do it, and that is when you know it's going to be a project worth talking about it, you know. If yeah, you know,
and I do think that shines through, because everyone here obviously is having the time of their life. I mean, when you watch Nicolas Cage slapping Gus around, you just imagine he's having one hell of a time. And I would imagine the production around him, from the cameraman to the director, they're also having that same good time.
And you can see, I've seen a few of the behind the scenes footage of, like, people that were playing the animatronics, and they were all really close. And, you know, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because it definitely shined through in the movie itself. But to confirm, you know, to your point, that yeah, they actually all were really close, and you saw them dancing and laughing and, you know, having fun and being silly when between takes. So it's these kind of projects that make me believe in Hollywood still.
Yeah. Which takes us to the production design for this one. I like the setup. The building's got a real claustrophobic slant to it, and the animatronic animals, you know, where they're front and center and you're looking on, especially when they look, you know, for want of a better term, so fucked up, it gave me a kind of Silent Hill vibe, which I took to immediately. So I was just wondering what you thought with regards to production. I mean, you've mentioned the practical effects, and you know, we're a stickler here on this show, because we always prefer practical effects, but I just wondered what you thought with regards to the general look of the movie.
Oh, I loved that they use practical effects. I'm totally with you on that. I feel like it's just whenever somebody takes the time to build a set, to build props, to paint, to color, to, you know, the graffiti inside, outside the building, like it just everything that took to create this movie set, I feel that it just practical is still preferred. I think people are silly that think that, oh, we can just totally move to CGI. But I think what people are forgetting is that actors are real people too. If you really want to sell a story, put us in the environment. You know, like I want to feel like I'm at Willy's. I want to, if I were, you know, the janitor, Liv, the sheriff, whomever, she had a shotgun in her hand. I don't feel like a CGI stick would have had the same kind of feel, right? No. Like
you're on about the environments. When I saw that bathroom first off, I would be like, okay, you keep the fucking car. I ain't cleaning this.
Listen, I just want to know what the fuck kind of cleaner he used, right? Like what kind of cleaning solution was that? Because that literally cleaned everything.
To get graffiti off the walls, that is...
Oh, those urinals is what I was talking about. Oh, God.
The only other, I mean, I don't know if you've got anything else. The only other production design note I've got is Siren Sarah is creepy as fuck.
She, oh, God, she is probably the fan favorite, and mine included. She really has this, she keeps coming back theme to her. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You think she's gone, but she's never really gone.
Well, I mean, this has a bit of a legacy. I mean, there were four issues of a Willy's Wonderland comic book series, which were released in October 2021 to July 2022, which served as a prequel to the movie and centers on the characters' backstories. Apparently, on January 23rd, 2023, there was a beat 'em up released on Apple and Android. However, a few months later, it was taken down on both platforms. They did announce it would be re-released with updates, but I've looked for it because I was kind of eager to play it, but I can't find it. Yeah, and finally, in an interview, Gio Parsons stated that he did have an idea for a sequel if the film got enough support. And apparently, as of February 23, Parsons said the sequel was trending positively. So, but I don't have any news on that. And you said chances are it's not likely to happen.
If they are saying otherwise, I would love to see it, but from what I understand, they're kind of leaving it to be as it were. Like the comic book series is, you know, you got the prequel there, but as far as, you know, that's past. So I think as far as moving forward, I'm not sure. So, but
yeah,
here's to hoping. Here's to hoping.
Well, I mean, we've discussed it pretty thoroughly now, but, you know, as a too long didn't read, just what is it about this one that makes you keep coming back?
I feel like I still discover new things every single time I watch it. And I've watched it well over 30 times at this point. I am a theme park goer and enjoyer and a roller coaster fanatic. And I can, you know, part of that is you go on the ride because you know what to expect. You know there's going to be a corkscrew here or a hi-hat over there, or, you know, you go upside down, you're in, you know, inverted for X amount of seconds over here, whatever. It's a fun experience where you know what to expect. It's almost like a comfort movie, but if a comfort movie was like injected with meth, you know? So
yeah, I do remember, you know, and obviously you said it on this while we've been talking tonight, that it's less a movie and more of a ride. Yeah, I kind of connect completely with that. I mean, I've said it so often this year in all the films that we've looked at. It's just crazy how much I use it. But a lot of the things that keep me coming back to these movies is just if they're fun. And this is so much damn fun.
You have to enjoy the fun of it. It's not supposed to be taken even remotely seriously. It's just a stupid movie that's like Cheech and Chong or Jay and Silent Bob, you know, that kind of vein, I feel.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice one. So, I mean, I think I can see which way this is headed already, but we'll come to our final thoughts in a moment. But before that, as promised, we're going to head over to our feedback queen, Vianne, to hear what you guys thought. Happy Halloween, Vianne. Let's hear what everyone has to say on this one.
Hey DK, so talking about Willy's Wonderland, it's always fascinating to me to see feedback on a film or a book or any piece of art that I'm not familiar with. And I have to say, I'm not familiar with Willy's Wonderland, but from this very first comment, I see that it involves Nicolas Cage, who I'm not a huge fan of, although he is in one of my all-time favorite Christmas movies, Trapped in Paradise, which if you haven't seen, do. It's one of his better performances. But he does do that finger move that he always does where he waves his hands and puts his fingers in the air. I'll be curious to see what people have to say about this and maybe add it to my own list of films to see. So Aston Bat says, Melissa introduced me to one of my favorite Nicolas Cage movies, Willy Wonderland. I think I've watched it north of 20 times at this point. High praise indeed. The score and soundtrack is amazing. The setup is your classic Trap the Travelers, and it just gets into zany, goofy, animatronic mayhem from there. All good things. I'm starting to have hope for this. She says, it's not terribly gory. The supporting cast does a rock star job of selling the small town devil's bargain. I think I'm going to watch it again tonight. Silver Screen Facebook group, Jay Hildreth, it's a miles better FNAF film. Oh, okay, I know FNAF, so okay, now I'm curious to see this. Jay says, it's a miles better FNAF film than the actual FNAF film. Not perfect, but still a fun 90 minutes. And for those not in the know, FNAF means Five Nights at Freddy's, the definitive animatronic mascot horror video game franchise that has really taken off. Joseph Bama Smith says, awesome movie. One of the only movies the main character doesn't say a word and still awesome. Hell, I even bought the shirt. Bonnie's and Clyde says, you ever wanted to see what a sensible person would do in an animatronic horror scenario? Willy's is for you. I'm going to have to check this movie out. Nick Cage may be silent throughout the whole film, but his face says it all. I'm just trying to clean, man. I'll get to you after my 15 minutes punch break. One of the best B-movies, quote, C-movies, question mark, I have ever had the pleasure of being surprised by campy comedy, animatronic gore, and some good old-fashioned small-town horror. 15 out of 10 would have my birthday there. I am super pumped to watch this now. I'm probably going to do that as soon as I finish recording this. DMK Weechen, I hope I said that right. I took a lot of German. This is a movie that you will not enjoy if you are attempting to see great cinema. It's an awesome way to bring the video game trope of silent protagonist to the silver screen. It's just good, stupid fun. Sometimes you just gotta have a popcorn movie. So continuing with our reviews, Carnivius said, not a fan of Cage in general. I just don't click with him at all. I did watch the film. It was all right, but my interest waned. Tamara K says, I thought it was interesting how he beat FNAF to punch at making a FNAF film. Also, I like some of the designs and the pinball breaks he always took. Ha ha. Sparkle Twizzle Phoenix says, Willy's Wonderland was an absolute delight. What a deeply unserious movie. And I loved every second of it. Nick Cage is clearly in his just doing whatever the hell he wants to era. And I love that for him. 11 out of 10. Would get high and eat candy while watching the world's most badass, unwilling janitor, absolutely clean house, so he can get the hell on with cleaning house again anytime. So that is quite the recommendation. Alexandria Scott, Willy's Wonderland is a gloriously unhinged horror comedy that embraces classic movie tropes with glee and turns them into a blood-soaked carnival ride, which is the best kind of carnival ride. Nicolas Cage delivers a delightfully deadpan performance as a silent drifter, a classic loner archetype dropped into a haunted Chuck E. Cheese fever dream. The film plays with well-worn horror elements, killer animatronics, a cursed town, and expendable teens, but it does so with such self-awareness and flair that it becomes a loving satire of the genre. The over-the-top gore, synth-heavy soundtrack, and absurdly choreographed fight scenes make the whole thing feel like a B-movie buffet, campy, chaotic, and deliciously fun. What more need be said at this point? I mean, I have never even heard of this movie, and I'm ready to cue it up right now and sit down with a glass of wine and enjoy this animatronic mascot horror fever dream, as somebody put it. So with that, I think I'm gonna send it back to you, DK. What do you think?
Thanks, Vian, and thanks as always to those of you who are gracious enough to share your opinions. We do appreciate you taking the time out to let us know. I've also got to give a special shout out to the semi-regular silver screen guest Adrienne, who said, and I quote, "Okay, for the first time in all of the history that I've been around you guys in your podcasts, this is the first ever time I've never heard of a movie." So, yeah, take a bow for that one as well, Melissa. You're contributing to Adrienne's ongoing cinema education.
Oh, well, I hope they enjoyed the ride just as much as we did.
Nice one. So, yeah, with you guys' thoughts on this one under our belt, it's time for us here in the studio to give our final thoughts on this one. And if you've been with us before, you know how it works. And if you haven't, well, it's, you know, it's not rocket science. So, as always, I'm going to come to our illustrious guest first. Melissa, what's your final take on Willy's Wonderland and score out of 5 for this one?
Willy's Wonderland is an exciting, fun, silly, bloody, gory, amazing ride of a movie that keeps you guessing, it keeps you wanting, and it gives you exactly all of that and more. Nicolas Cage creates such a vindication of any Five Nights at Freddy's player or fan that I feel is just, you know, you kind of need a cigarette after you watch the movie. It's one of those. And I think that, of course, we all know I'm going to say 5 out of 5, but just because of how much love was put into it. I mean, if I really, really wanted to be honest, I would probably say 4.5 out of 5 because, again, there was those, you know, I can't forgive the mannequin in the corner. It just, that was such a big one. But I think that this will forever be one of those movies that you could even watch it at, you know, as at your current Halloween party. You know, I feel like this is one of those movies that just needs to be in the yearly Halloween rotation.
Yeah, so it's a 5 out of 5 from you then, yeah?
Absolutely.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I mean, it's never gonna be considered high art, but I didn't go into this expecting high art. I went in expecting, and I'm quoting my partner in crime here, a fun ride, and that's exactly what I got. It's cheesy, it's frenetic, it embraces its premise and commits to it. The performances, for the most part, are decent enough, ranging from chewing the scenery to chewing the world. I honestly never thought I'd be watching a Nick Cage movie where he doesn't speak, but here we are. The effects are never going to be ILM level, and on occasion it gives off kind of student movie vibes, but honestly, to me, that's all part of its charm. It works, and the aesthetic down to the score is just my jam. So any initial reservations I had were soon put to rest. Yeah, I'm down for this gonzo shit as long as it delivers, and this one delivers. So I'm going to give this 4 out of 5, because like I say, it's not perfect, but it's up there for me. So putting those two scores together, weirdly enough, it does give Willy's Wonderland a cult classic score of 4.5 out of 5, which is what you were kind of erring towards.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, from your thrill at the prospect of wanting to talk about this one, it was kind of a foregone conclusion to some extent that it would be up in the higher tiers of scores on the show. But are you happy that I found it so entertaining?
Oh, of course. I mean, you know, this is literally a piece of my soul. And so I give this discussion on this movie, and I talk about this with such reverence because this is a piece of my soul. So to know that you were able to receive it so well, it's, you know, it feels like you're back in high school again or whatever, and you're showing your friend that new song that you love, and you want to make sure that they love it too, right? So
nice one. So yeah, once more, that's it for this. As always, I hope you found this one worth your time. And if you enjoyed yourself, consider hitting those like and subscribe buttons. And if we've put you in the mood to watch Willy's Wonderland once again, well, that's not a bad thing, is it? So yeah, all that's left me to do today is to thank my awesome guest for jumping in on this one. So Melissa, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure being here. And anytime you'd love to have me, I'd love to come back. This is such a great vibe, just talking about fun movies. I would love to come back.
Oh, fantastic. I look forward to it. So, yeah, that's it from Cult Classics. I'll be back in, well, just a couple of days. Until then, from Melissa and I, thank you for joining us on this special. We hope you have a great Halloween, whatever you're doing. Stay safe out there. Have fun. And thanks for visiting Willy's Wonderland with us. We hope you had a fantabulous time. Good night.
You have been listening to the Cult Classics Show, part of the Silver Screen Podcast. Created, written, and hosted by DK. Editing by Nick. Produced by Mike Wilson. Feedback section produced by Lady Vienne. Opening credits by Ian Sanderson. Music by Timeless Journey. Follow us on social media. Links to all of our social media pages can be found on our link tree. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. This has been a Mad Badger production for the Media Matters Podcast Network. Copyright 2024. Thank you for joining us. We hope to see you next time. And remember, no matter where you go, there you are.